May the Buddhas and ancestors' great compassion relieve us from karmic effects, allowing us to practice the way without hindrance. Somehow, the great compassion of these ancient ancestors can still help us. The way they spoke with each other and the way other ancestors recorded those words and the way they've come down to us is one way in which the Buddhas and ancestors reveal their great compassion that can help us. Today we take up and examine the story of our ancestor Yunyan Dansheng. Cloudy cliff, dim splendor. Sometimes the light, the splendorous light appears dim, but same light. Is also his other name, maybe posthumous name, Wuchu, no abode. It's the ancestor of no abode. And this story is somewhat similar to yesterday's in that it wasn't just a matter of one student and one teacher conversing and bringing forth the way. There was more help involved here. Like you might recall yesterday's story of Shirto going to Yaoshan telling him that this way won't do and not this way won't do, and him being stuck and Yaoshan sending him to his friend Matsu, and Matsu being able to turn that mosquito of Yaoshan. So three people involved. This is another story with three people involved, clarifying the way together. But in this case, one of them is not even around. It's just the words of the third one. The 37th ancestor was Great Master Yunyan Wuchu. He first studied with Baijiang for 20 years, and afterwards he studied with Yaoshan. So again, Baijiang, remember, was in this other stream that stream of Dharma flowing from Saochi through Nanyue, Matsu, to Baijiang. So just like the previous story, he sent him to the other stream to meet there. Here he practiced our Soto ancestor union, practiced for 20 years, maybe most of his practice time actually, with Baijiang, who is Baijiang's student was Huangbo, whose student was Lin Ji. So no discrimination between lineages in these early days. And Baijiang was also one of the really great Chinese ancestors, known for many stories and many deeds, one of which is that he supposedly is the one who kind of set up the Zen way of community living, like particular style of Zen monasteries. Of course, there were other monasteries, but Zen had a kind of unique flavor, and part of that that Baijiang instigated, according to the legend, is this way that the Zen monasteries were like supported themselves through cultivating the fields, farming communities. There may have been others before, but it kind of seems like Buddhism was popular in China already, and it was largely supported by various people, maybe who weren't even practicing there. And I think the government had a lot of support. They were really tied into government support, which meant that they had to go along with what the emperor requested. So this was kind of becoming more independent and self-sufficient to start these farming communities. They didn't have to be in the cities either where the emperor lived. They could just set up a mountain temple anywhere and start farming the land and grow their food and it was kind of a back to the land movement. And part of that spirit was Baijiang's famous phrase when, he always felt like all the community should go work together in the fields to support the place. When in his old age, his students wanted him to rest, so they took his tools, his work tools, and he refused to come to the meals and eat. And what's going on? He said, well, a day without work is a day without food. That was Baijiang, the farmer. So Yun Yan studied at first with Baijiang for 20 years, and afterwards he studied with Yaoshan. Yaoshan asked him, what Dharma does Baijiang teach? And apparently they would have those conversations a lot, you can imagine, right? Because though Yaoshan maybe knew Baijiang, but maybe not, we don't know if they knew each other, but he's like, well, you practiced with Baijiang, who I've heard is a great teacher. So he was always testing, well, what does Baijiang teach? What does your old teacher he spent all that time with teach? So Yunyan said, well, once he entered the hall to speak, give a Dharma talk, and all the monks were standing in rows. because apparently this is how the Dharma talks were given, like this, sitting in rows, but Dharma talks were standing. So maybe they weren't that long. Often you hear like a dialogue, and then sometimes maybe they were long, because at the end of the talk, often the teacher says, "You've been standing a long time. Please take care and end the talk." But because they were standing, well, maybe people didn't fall asleep, and also people could maybe interact more easily. They could like come forward. Sometimes there's those stories, they're all standing and one of them suddenly comes forward and slaps the teacher or something. I don't know if they still do this standing Dharma talks in China or in Japan. I don't think I've heard of. So the monks were standing in rows, listening to the Dharma talk. Or once he entered the hall to speak, and they were standing in rows. So maybe he didn't even start the talk yet. And he, Baijiang, suddenly scattered them with his staff, his shipe, big stick. And then he called out as they were scattered and like, whoa, he's swinging the staff around. They were kind of running and ducking or running away, who knows. And he called out, "Oh, monks." When they turned around, Baijiang asked, "What is it?" So Yao Shan, who he's Yunyan is reporting this story to, said, "Why didn't you say that before? Today, thanks to you, I have been able to meet Brother Wai Hai Baijiang." With these words, Yunyan was greatly awakened. You follow that?
Yeah. Wow.
I'm going to read it again. So, so Yao Shan and is now practicing with his teacher Yunyan, and Yao Shan, oh no, the other way around, right? Yunyan is practicing with his teacher Yao Shan, and so Yao Shan, his teacher, asks, "What dharma did Baijiang, your former teacher, teach?" And Yunyan said, "Once he entered the hall to speak and all the monks were standing in rows, he suddenly scattered them with his staff. Then he called out, 'Oh monks!' When they turned around, Baijiang asked, 'What is it?'" So now Yao Shan, the one who's hearing this story about Baijiang, said, "Why didn't you say that before? Why didn't you tell me this story before? Today, thanks to you, now I've been able to meet Baijiang." And when the storyteller, Yunyan, heard that, he was greatly awakened. Very dynamic events. So it's not just like being sent to another person who says something in reference to or, you know, building on the previous words, but just, and it wasn't when he, interestingly also, right, it wasn't when Yunyan just told the story. He maybe told the story many times to many people about his teacher Baijiang, but he told the story, yeah, you know, he maybe did this a lot even. The monks are all standing there, he scattered them with the staff, said, "Monks, what is it?" But this time, his teacher, Yao Shan, said, "Oh, that's so great. Now I understand Baijiang's teaching." When he understood, then Yunyan understood himself.
risk of underlining the obvious, I can't resist anyhow. To me, this is such a story of humility and generosity, and, you know, about our collective practice.
How so?
Because, you know, there's a way that in the, like, say, nowadays, you know, a person who's a great teacher, it's like, oh, aren't I great? I know everything. And, you know, so humility to me of Yao Shan, wow, you know, just taking delight in his colleagues' actions rather than, you know, like nowadays people are kind of, and maybe back then they were too, you know, not to paint it rosy, but, you know, competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's my teaching, that's my teaching, that's my student, you know, that's my workshop, that's TM, you know, that's my trademark, you know. So it feels to me like the humility and the generosity both of just learning from one another and the equality of student and teacher. You know, so when I'm projecting my values onto this story, you know, I think, well, then, you know, Yunyan's awakening was something about appreciating their interactivity and the fact of, you know, here's this one great teacher taking delight in the actions of another great teacher and the appreciation of that.
Yeah. And sometimes really being like, oh, for the first time, you know, because they had these other dialogues about Bhajang too, but now for the first time I really met him, this one really like does it for me. Now I see what he was really about, Bhajang. So yeah, and I think there's so many different teachings going around and in modern times, so that I think is great when we're really open to different things, like I have Dharma friends who go and practice with other teachers and even in other traditions and things like that. And my natural curiosity when I see them again, how was that teaching, and what did he or she say? Yeah, I think curiosity about like all Dharma. How is the Dharma being taught over there? I think it's great to just be able to, be open and curious about any helpful teachings going on anywhere. And what was it that, after all this time, finally Yunyan was greatly awakened, not from the story of Bhajang on its own, but somehow through this appreciation of Yao Shan. So Yunyan was from the Wang family of Qian Chung in Chungling. He left home at Jurmen when he was still young. He studied with Bhajang Huaihai for 20 years without success. That's part of it. After that, he paid a visit to Yao Shan. Yao Shan asked him, "Where are you from?" as is often asked. And Yunyan said, "I come from Bhajang." Yao Shan asked, "What does Bhajang say to his students?" And Yunyan said, "He usually says," this is another story, "I have an expression which contains 100 flavors." He usually says that. At least he said this once. Bhajang says, "I have an expression which contains 100 flavors." Yao Shan, they're discussing another conversation with Bhajang. Yao Shan said, "Well, salt tastes salty and bland tastes bland. What is neither salty nor bland is the right flavor. What is the expression that has 100 flavors? And Yun Yan could not answer. So he's kind of like using his previous teacher's sayings to kind of like test him, check him out. It's like, well, he always said that, but like, now how do you understand? And maybe if you understand it, stood it in some limited way, I have an expression that contains 100 flavors. He's saying, well, however you understood that, you should first know, right, that salt tastes salty and bland tastes bland, but what's neither salty nor bland is the right flavor. So, kind of like the other side of 100 flavors, no flavor. Neither this flavor nor that flavor is the right flavor. So now that you know that, what's the expression that has 100 flavors? And Yun Yan was stuck. Oh. Maybe he would have said beforehand, if he hadn't pointed out this thing about neither salty nor bland, if Yao Shan had just asked, how do you understand that phrase of your teacher, I have an expression that contains 100 flavors, he might have said something like, well, his phrase includes the whole universe. Everything is there in every phrase, actually. So, but in this case he says, actually, the right phrase doesn't contain this or that. So, he couldn't say. And then Yao Shan asked, following up right after this, when Yun Yan could not answer, what's the expression that has 100 flavors? Yao Shan asked, what do you intend to do about the birth and death right in front of you? Birth and death is the great matter, right? And birth and death is also the birth. Birth-death is the Chinese way of translating this term samsara. Samsara, like the endless cycling through birth and death. Samsara, and it's, you know, generally has the implication that it's painful situation. Samsara, this kind of like driven, cycling through birth and death, driven by the winds of karma, driven by our habitual tendencies and grasped views, keep turning us through in this tedious, endless cycle. For sure, we call that birth and death. Or birth actually can also be translated as life. So life and death. Life, death. Death, life. And in Zen, it's often said, this birth and death is the great matter for study. So Yao Shan said, well, what do you intend to do about the birth and death right in front of you? That's the question, isn't it? And Yun Yan answered, there is no birth and death in front of me. Is there birth and death? Different turnings of the Dharma wheel roll around the world. There is no birth and death in front of me. Yao Shan asked, how long were you with Bai Zheng? Yun Yan said, 20 years. Yashan said, you were with Bijan for 20 years and you still have not got rid of your commonness. So, in Zen circles, sometimes saying things like, there is no birth and death in front of my eyes is a kind of common, mundane view. And too easy. And easy to say. What do you intend to do about the birth and death right in front of you right now? This life of stuck position. Actually, there's no birth and death here. Period. And that's being called a common view. Not in the world. It sounds kind of like an uncommon view in the world, but in these Zen circles, maybe a common thing to say. Too easy to say. Another time, Yunyuan was standing beside Yaoshan in attendance, and Yaoshan asked, what dharma does Bijan teach? And Yunyuan said, sometimes he says, quote, look behind the three statements, understand beyond the six propositions. So, I don't know what those are. One footnote said the three statements are like, it exists, it doesn't exist, and both exists and doesn't exist. The trilemma deal. And six propositions. These were some Dharma teachings that were not so widespread, I don't think. Did anyone ever heard of three statements and six propositions? It could be like a Qiantai thing, you know, because that was the Buddhism prevalent in China, and Juri and the Qiantai school had all kinds of lists and ways of like different dialectical workings of how reality works together. So, anyway, Yaoshan asked, what dharma does Bijan teach? Yunyuan said, sometimes he says, look beyond the three statements, understand beyond the six propositions. So, it doesn't matter what they are because we're talking about beyond them. Beyond numbered lists, basically. Yaoshan said, that doesn't have the remotest connection with it. That doesn't have the remotest connection with it. He asked again, well, what dharma does he teach? It seemed like he was constantly asking his student, well, what dharma does Bijan teach? In order to like, and maybe you could say, well, he knew he was there for 20 years and maybe Yunyuan himself said that he felt like he never really made much progress and he didn't feel settled in his practice. So he's maybe trying to use all these teachings from the past 20 years to kind of like turn them, use them, instead of bringing up something totally new. Well, because he knew Bijan was a great teacher, right? So, well, how did you understand Bijan's teaching? More like, can I help you to look at these teachings that you didn't really get so well, maybe, in a new way? That could be kind of the spirit of it, too. So what dharma does he teach? And Yunyuan said, once he entered the hall, etc. Dot, 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 as the Kazon even says. And so on, as in the main case. Hearing these words of Yaoshan, he was awakened. And so now Kazon's commentary. The basic point of studying Zen and learning the way is to clarify mind and awaken to the essential. We might ask whether we agree with that. Is that why we've come here to Sesshin? The basic point of studying Zen and learning the way is to clarify mind and awaken to the essential. Yes?
What is keeping and clarify mind? What does that mean?
Clarify mind. What is mind? Clarify, what is it?
So, clarify what the mind is.
That's how I understand it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, not to clear it. Mm-hmm. Well, it could be that too, but I would understand it as clarifying this great matter of birth and death, which actually is mind. Clarifying how mind creates birth and death, and how mind is free from birth and death. Mind is the what is that first verse of the Dhammapada, one of Buddha's earliest teachings, something like mind is the forerunner of all activity, of everything, he maybe even says. Mind is foremost, so clarifying it then seems to be the issue. So even though the monk Yun Yan practiced with Baijiang for 20 years, the conditions were not right. Later, he studied with Yaoshan. Thus you must not think that lengthy cultivation, practice, and study are necessarily good. Because they did this for 20 years and the conditions were not right. Maybe he was just stuck in a 20-year rut. The only basic thing is to clarify mind. Meeting with the right conditions has nothing to do with whether you're a beginner or someone who's practiced for a long time. How wonderful. This doesn't depend necessarily on any length of time. It is conditions from past lives that make good conditions. Yes.
It seems like in these stories, as we study them, we kind of think about what was happening in that mind of that ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
And at least to me, I have this framework that somehow within the story we're supposed to clarify together what happened.
Mm.
But if it's a moment and it's right, then what does it matter what was said? When I put those two things together, I feel confused. Like somehow these stories are bringing something forth, and yet if it was just the rightness of the moment and the pebble hitting the bamboo and the reflection in the water, so what? I mean, it was
like we're, like how are, yeah.
Flowering, not the
not some, like you're saying, if it's just a matter of, yeah, the ripeness of the moment and the pebble hitting the bamboo, it's kind of like, well, let's study exactly how a pebble hits a bamboo and how one really perceives that, and then we'll get it.
Yeah,
like, how silly that would be, right?
That.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I think it's not so much that in these stories we're trying to, like, figure out exactly what happened and what happened in their mind. Which is hard to not try to figure that out, actually, because our human tendency is to want to do that, to kind of get to the bottom of things, find some logical basis for some story. But the flavor of these Zen stories is something like just hearing them, and they turn us, just like what happened for these people. And the stories are never explaining anything. They're often like, undercutting explanation. And they're strange stories. So I think there's something about exploring them together, and they do turn us, don't they? Like they have various effects, which are maybe quite different for each of us. So one of us might have some little sentence in the commentary, we might go, oh, wow, that's just like, I have a whole new take on something. And somebody might just say, let's skip over that part. So it's interesting. This is our family style, I think, is bringing these up. Yes.
For exactly what you're saying, it seems a little off to have it described as the 20 years with Baijong kind of as wasted.
Yeah.
Because in a way, those 20 years set up the conditions for awakening.
Good point. Yeah, I think that's so true. These conversations couldn't have happened if not for those 20 years. So, whether Kazan picks up on that or not, maybe not, but I think that I would agree with that, that everything, we don't know what's, what influence all our day-to-day life is having on us. And I've sometimes had that thought myself. I had a kind of like a moment of clarity or something, and feeling like, wow, all my completely confused thoughts before this all led up to this. Like, everything was part of it. And at the time of the total confusion, it was like, it just seems like, I just wish there could be some other way than this. But then at that moment, and every moment is actually like this, right? Every moment of our life, everything before it leads up to it. But I think especially at these moments of great appreciation, I think those are the times that often can help us appreciate those 20 years of wallowing around in confusion. And it's like, from the point of view of the present moment of clarity, no time was ever wasted. No time was ever wasted. But when we're in the perspective of wallowing around and what feels like, I'm just wasting time now, then that's what we call wasting time. I could almost say, like, well, wasting time is when we're, like, thinking and believing that we're really, like, wasting time, and then we're really clear in the present, then all that past wasted time is suddenly just, like, turned. It's just, like, suddenly becomes light. It's like redefined. It's no longer wasted time. And the way that every past moment leads up to this one is so completely inconceivable. Yes, Patrick.
Well, I guess I'm just agreeing with everybody. I've been here 20 years, or 19, but who's counting? And, as I said before, the tide comes in, the tide goes. practices, and they come here and just thrive. And, you know, sometimes it's just because, you know, I'm here in Santa Cruz, and this is where I'm going to settle, and I was unsettled in my life before, and now I'm settled here, and, you know, vice versa. You know, sometimes Santa Cruz was just a place that nothing in their life was really settled, and someplace else they settled. And then I think you just read something about it has more to do with past lives.
Yeah.
Which means to me that there's a lot of reasons why a person is, and that settler pebble hits and everything just falls into place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're talking about, our past lives of this life and maybe infinite past lifetimes in the Dharma view, which we don't know what happened. We don't even know what happened in this life. We don't know what happened in our, you know, first 3 months of life. That hugely set up the conditions for this moment. We don't remember anymore. Everything is creating everything. The conditions, and again, this issue of destiny or fate. Who knows how we end up in Santa Cruz or something else? I mean, we can explain, oh, it's because this happened and this happened, but I think it's very mysterious, especially in the realm of practice and spiritual practice and how we end up different things. It often seems quite random. To me, it seems pretty random. Like San Francisco Zen Center. I was on the East Coast and there was, you know, the Wind Bell magazine, the like newsletter of San Francisco Zen Center. For some reason, that was like in one of the like college dorm roommate's room, there was this Wind Bell, and it's just like, oh, the San Francisco Zen Center, just kind of like, I didn't really even think about it, but somehow there was some seed there, and because I graduated in the winter from college on the East Coast, it was really cold in the Northeast, so I was like, I'm going to California. If I hadn't taken time off and graduated in the spring, it would be like, oh, here's the Providence Zen Center right next door in the beautiful spring. I'll go sit there.
It's so interesting. This whole conversation kind of liberates the thought that I've gone round and round and go, I'm 65. How come I came to practice at this time? This is, you know, why wasn't I here 30 years ago? Right? And then this really shifts that perspective to go, oh, this is what is, and this is just fine the way it is. And so all that critical thinking about, oh, all this time wasted, or however it's perceived, all of a sudden shifts to be, oh, this is exactly how it's supposed to be. Mm. This, I arrived when I was supposed to arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's okay.
It's even more than okay. It's like perfect.
Well, but it's so funny that we have this, you know, immense criticism in our mind of how you think it should have played out. Mm. How, you know,
yeah.
Would've been
shoulda. Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Funny that is now.
Yeah. As you're speaking, I'm thinking, oh, maybe there's this principle, which is maybe a little bit about, I was talking about, I've had this experience of feeling like really like, yes, this is it. It's like a basic appreciation in the present, like a present moment of real deep appreciation for what is. That present appreciation comes along with appreciation of the past in a new way. And when we're not really appreciating the present, then it's easy to blame our non-appreciation of the present on the past. The very same past that in just a slight different turn is totally appreciated. Even like all the pain of it, all the stuff I had to go through, and like I would never ever want to go through again in the past. But now, in this present moment of appreciation, I see how every one of those painful moments led up to right now. I mean, in the realm of dependent co-arising, isn't that how it actually is? I mean, it's not like we're making that up. It really did lead up to this. And here's the proof, this moment. It can't be any other way. So I'm kind of... the appreciation of the light in the present instantly transforms the past into light to be appreciated. Meeting with right conditions. This is it, right? Right conditions are actually the conditions that are. Right conditions are no other conditions than the ones that are happening. Meeting with right conditions has nothing to do with whether you're a beginner or someone who's practiced for a long time. It's conditions from past lives that make good conditions. It isn't that Baijong was not the right man, but simply that conditions were not right at that time for Yunyan. So it wasn't even like, well, there wasn't like affinity between them. It was just that the conditions were such that Yunyan's practice and understanding were such. So we could even say, in the light of the conversation we're having about this, that to say the conditions were not right, we could put that in kind of quotes and like, well, they were really right. Right?
He just wasn't ready.
Yeah. He wasn't ready for a certain... We could say he wasn't ready for this particular moment of awakening, but he was ready for all the moments that he lived. Being a spiritual teacher is not a matter of pointlessly gathering together a community of monks and teaching them. It is nothing but getting them or helping them to penetrate directly to the source and be deeply awakened at once. Behind our hesitation to believe this is so is our hidden belief that wallowing is not it. Well put. But how is wallowing it? Can't be any other way. Conditions are such as they are. And to completely embrace dependent co-arising, in other words, completely embrace no alternative to this moment, the conditions of this moment, to completely embrace what we might call wallowing, dependently arisen, radiant, bright wallowing in confusion, as such, then, just like Ajo said, the 84,000 jumbled thoughts arising and ceasing themselves become the light, wallowing in doubt and confusion, seen for what it is, can be the light. Or is the light, but it's not appreciated if we reify our doubt into like something other than the dependently co-arisen doubt of the moment given to us from infinite past lives and Buddhas and ancestors and all. So the ancients always asked, where are you from? Extensive travel by Zen people was done to test spiritual teachers. So the teacher tried to find out where they were from. They would also ask, why are you here? This clarified the depth or shallowness of determination and whether conditions for awakening were near or remote. Therefore, here in this story, Yaoshan asked Yunyan where he was from. It's a big open question. This is actually what we've been talking about, right? Where are we from? We're from countless past lives. We're from every turning condition, rising and ceasing, where we're from. But then how do we express that? Sometimes we express it by, I'm from Aptos. And sometimes that's, then the commentators say, did that monk have eyes or not? Sometimes they're criticized for saying Aptos, and sometimes they're praised. All depends on conditions. In order to show that he had not just wandered here and there, studying with this one or that one, he said he came from Baijiang. Yaoshan and Baijiang appeared at the same time as representatives of the Qingyuan and Nanyue lines. This is why Yaoshan asked, what dharma does Baijiang teach the monks? At this point, if Yunyan had experienced the truth, he would have presented what he had heard and understood, but he merely repeated what he had heard. Yaoshan could have asked, well, what dharma did Baijiang teach? And Yunyan could have said, well, the monks all assembled, and then, Yunyan could have like pulled out a staff from behind his back and like scattered on Yaoshan away. And Yaoshan said, what? What are you talking about? I'm asking what Baijiang did. And Yunyan could have said, what is it? But he just kind of explained the story. Or he could have said, Baijiang never said a single thing in his life. And then maybe he would have gotten the answer. You studied with Baijiang for all that time and you're still that mundane. He usually says, I have an expression which contains 100 flavors. Kazan's commentator says, this one expression contains all and is filled completely with countless virtues. Nevertheless, can people hear that expression or not? In order to get him to see it thoroughly, Yaoshan said, salt tastes salty and bland tastes bland. What's not salty or bland is the right flavor. What's the expression that contains 100 flavors? So, Kazan's saying, one expression does contain and is completely filled with countless virtues and 100 flavors, but can people hear that or not? People understand that as it is. So in order to help him understand countless virtues and myriad flavors of a single phrase, he said, well, actually, the correct phrase is not any flavor. The expression was something that Yunyan had not heard thoroughly. As a result of using his ordinary ears and hearing what might well have been the croaking of a bullfrog, he was dazed and had no answer. That's why Yaoshan asked him, what do you intend to do about the birth and death right in front of you? Both the beginner and the veteran have to consider this to be the one great matter. Impermanence is swift, and the matter of birth and death is grave. This is, as you may have seen on the Han, the sounding board, calls us to Zazen, is what it says. Birth and death is the great matter, and permanence is swift. Awake, each one, don't waste time. It could be a little asterisk after that, and at the bottom, this little note that says, like, if you appreciate this moment, you'll see that wasting time has never happened. And in a way, the asterisk is like the hit on the Han, which says, stop what you're doing, just time to go to the Zendo. Even if one who has aroused an aspiration travels around and looks like a monk, if he does not clarify the matter of birth and death and reach the path of liberation, he does not understand the secret beneath the patch robe. Which, you know, that is
intimacy.
Therefore, he does not escape the bondage of the triple world. It's hard to get out of the rut of birth and death. I often think of karmic tendencies as like a rut in the road, like on a muddy road, right? There's that wheel track, and you kind of like, you slip into it, and you're like, you keep trying to like, you know, like trying to get out. It's like kind of bending the wheel and stuff to try to like pull out. The front wheels are out, but the back wheel's still in the rut, and the front falls back in again, and it's like, and you're out, but then you just, I'm out of the rut, but then you fall back in, and you just, birth and death is like that. A rut. He resembles someone who wears the patch robe pointlessly, like someone who carries the eating bowls aimlessly. Ancients like Yaoshan question people like Yunyan like this, so that they would not fritter away the time for strenuous practice, but maintain energetic activity. But Yunyan spoke carelessly, saying, there is no birth and death in front of me. If you just reach the realm of tranquility and joy, of ease and joy. This is this phrase is, I think it's a chapter title of the Lotus Sutra maybe too. The ease and joy practice, easy practice chapter, I think is the literally like the ease and joy, and that phrase is also used in the Fukan Zazengi. The essential art of Zazen is thinking of what doesn't think. How do you do that? Well, it's not thought. This is the essential art of Zazen. And it's the Dharma gate of ease and joy. repose and bliss. The practice and realization of totally culminated enlightenment. Just sitting. So, in response to, there is no birth and death in front of me, well, if you just reach this realm of ease and joy, Zazen, and carefully attain the original purpose of your wanderings and practice, then such a viewpoint will be unnecessary. The viewpoint of, there is no birth and death in front of me. Even though the Heart Sutra might agree, such a viewpoint is unnecessary. Holding such a view and saying it as such is not necessary. At such a time, what's necessary? The family style of the peasants is most pristine. It looks like there's going to be a village festival in the park today. Yaoshan asked, how long were you with Baijiang? He was asking how many years he'd been cultivating the way since he began wandering around as a monk. And Yunyan said, 20 years. Though this ancient did not waste any time in training for the way, it seemed as if he had spent the time in vain. We already investigated that in such a way. Therefore, Yaoshan said, you were with Baijiang for 20 years and you still have not got rid of your commonness. Even if Yunyan understood that there is no birth and death and saw that there is no self and other, he was still unaware of his own original head with this view. So, again, these little phrases, my personal conditioning, hears this, sees this kind of like vision of these three turnings of the Dharma wheel come into view around like understanding that there is no birth and death and no self or other as a kind of second turning negation, right? But he was unaware of his own original head. There's something imminent, present, shining that can be called many things, like original head. He had no chance to release his grip on the cliff and jump. If one does not quickly turn back to emptiness, however, one has still not got rid of one's commonness. Neither has one destroyed discrimination and attitudes, nor destroyed one's prison. Isn't that pitiful? Yaoshan questioned him repeatedly in an attempt to get him to touch his true self, but he did not notice it. Even if he was awakened beyond the six propositions, still it was not real, just as an iron hammer without a socket does not create a standard. They're always coming up with these strange images. So I'm picturing it's a this iron hammerhead, very useful, can do a lot of work. Maybe sledgehammer head even. You can really build a house with that. But if there's no hole in it to put the handle, it's just a big heavy block that's maybe like brand new, shining out of the furnace, a cast iron hammerhead, beautiful but useless. Just as an iron hammer without a socket does not create a standard, even if he had cut off the myriad distinctions, still the fundamental clarity of the true self was obscured. Yaoshan said, that doesn't have the remotest connection. He pointed out again that coming to see him seemed useless. So now that Keizan goes back into commenting on the main story about Baijiang swinging the staff and scattering the people who were so mindfully and attentively standing in orderly rows, waiting as they did on each day for the Dharma talk. Some maybe like trying to wake up and like, yeah, okay, another day, Baijiang's going to give another talk. Maybe he's going to tell us about the 100 flavors again, because he always talks about that. Suddenly the staff starts flailing around the room, you know, what? They don't know what's happening and bump into each other and start running around. And Baijiang, monks, they stop for a second in this moment of startled, fresh presence. And he says, what is it? Now. So we have this similar story with Guishan and Yangshan in case 37 of the Book of Serenity, where Guishan asks Yangshan, if someone suddenly said, all sentient beings just have active or karmic consciousness, boundless and unclear, with no fundamental or foundation to rely on, how would you prove this in experience? Let me know this story. Yangshan said, if a monk comes, I call him. Hey, you! Oh, monks! If the monk turns his head, I say, what is it? And if he hesitates, like, oh, what is it? What? What are you doing? Is this supposed to be a Dharma talk? I say, not only is their active karmic consciousness boundless and unclear, they have no fundamental to rely on. And Guishan said, good, good. That's a good way to prove this in experience. So their commentary here says, it's basically, there's another story, a third story, the same principle too. It mentions this one of Baijiang, but it also brings up a monk asking Yunnan, the treatise on the Flower Ornament Sutra says that the fundamental affliction of ignorance itself is the immutable knowledge of all Buddhas. this may be similar to Jean's point about that this wallowing moment is very light. The fundamental affliction of ignorance itself is the immutable knowledge of all Buddhas. But this principle is most profound and mysterious in the extreme, difficult to comprehend. Yunnan said, "This is most distinctly clear, easy to understand." And then at that moment, when they're having this conversation, a boy happened to be sweeping there. Yunnan called to him, "O monk." The boy turned his head, like he's sweeping, right? So it's kind of like the monks are running here and there. "Monks!" They turn their head back to Bhajang, who calls them. Just a meeting in the moment. "Monks!" There's a moment of readiness. It's like, "Attention! Oh, monks! Oh, hey, you! Excuse me! Huh?" There's like, for a split second, we're just like open and ready and like, what's happening? Yes? A lot of Zen stories have this kind of conversation, right? That somebody calls somebody and they say, "Yes?" And then the teacher says, "Go away, you didn't get it."
Either a call or the slap or the hit, mm-hmm, or the thing falling on your head, mm-hmm, or, you know,
yeah,
that letting go of the cliff. I mean, all those,
yeah,
things.
Yeah.
Nose twisting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Variety of
methodology. Yes. Skillful means of Zen. Yes.
But sometimes it comes from non-humans.
Like a pebble hitting a bamboo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A peach blossom opening. Mm-hmm. A spider sitting in the center of its mandala. Yeah. So the boy was sweeping. Yunnan called him. The boy turned his head. And Yunnan pointed and said, "Is this not the immutable knowledge of all Buddhas?" I mean, you might think, isn't that a little simple? The immutable, you know, unchangeable, perfect, complete knowledge and wisdom of all Buddhas. Just, huh? Little sweeping boy, huh? Yunnan then asked the boy, "What is your Buddha nature?" The boy looked around in confusion at a loss and kind of walked off, trying to escape. And Yunnan said, "Is this not the fundamental affliction of ignorance?" When the Zen teacher says, "What is Buddha nature?" How to not try to figure out the right answer is very hard. And the commentator here says, "If you can comprehend this, then you become a Buddha immediately." The boy's bewilderment and the monk's hesitation are no different. The fundamental affliction of ignorance and the boundless, unclear, active consciousness are also the same. When Yunnan and Yangshan examined monks and tested people, they accomplished their aim in this way. As for me, this is Wan Song, the Book of Serenity commentator. He says, "My view is otherwise. The boy and the monk both had thoroughgoing, immutable knowledge. Yunnan and Yangshan had boundless active consciousness, the ones who were questioning them. Anyone who can discern will see. To set up these tests in the first place and question these people like this, that's just a bunch of boundless karmic consciousness. To go on talking like this about all these skillful means and these great ancestors is just churning around karmic stuff in the dry, muddy rut. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, a siren moans in the distance. Somebody's going to help somebody in distress. While children gather at the park for their harvest festival to celebrate something.
You have
to read the part about the monkey riding. Oh. Okay. Tiantong's verse on this story. One call and he turns his head. Do you know the self or not? Vaguely, like the moon through ivy. A crescent moon at that. The child of riches, as soon as he falls on the boundless road of destitution, has such sorrow. Vaguely, like the moon seen through tangled wisteria and ivy. Just a tiny crescent moon. Fundamental affliction of ignorance is itself the immutable knowledge of all Buddhas. Is this difficult or extremely simple to discern? Like a sliver of crescent moon seen through overgrown and untrimmed ivy on an autumn evening. May all beings swim in the light of ease and joy, open to the birth and death in front of them. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. The illusions things are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.